Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Summer has come to an end, and if your houseplants have been vacationing outside, it is time to bring them in. We're going to start the hour with some advice for how to do that, and later on, we will answer your questions. With me today, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard. Oh, I'll put you on the air, Richard. There we go. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. Cindy Haynes is also here, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. And Richard, there is a little bit of a chill in the air. The leaves are starting to turn. And if you've got houseplants outside, it is time to think about bringing them in. When is your deadline?
Obviously, before a frost or freeze. But I would actually start that right now as far as if you have plants outside like hibiscus, whatever, which like full sun, I would put them in the shade. It could be under a tree or on a porch, but you're trying to gradually acclimate the plants to indoor conditions. And so indoors, they're not going to get nearly as much light. So put them in a shady place and leave them there for several days. Before you bring them in, I would probably wash them with a stream of water. You might want to use insecticidal soap, and that would actually kill things like spider mites and things like that. And obviously bring them inside before a frost or freeze.
And what would happen if you just pick them up, take them inside without this kind of gradual transition?
Well, the transition will be more dramatic. And in response to that, that may cause stress. For example, if you do have a hibiscus and you bring it inside, it's going to lose leaves. And that's because of the stress involved, the lower light levels, the temperatures, et cetera. But if the change is more drastic, the stress will be greater, and they'll lose more leaves. But they will lose leaves, and that may occur for maybe 4, 5, 6 weeks. Once they acclimate to the indoor conditions, the leaf drop should cease, but it may occur for 4, 5, 6 weeks.
All right, and you also mentioned that stream of water, a little bit of insecticidal soap. What happens if you don't take those precautions, or what could happen?
Well, you might bring in things, for example, white flies. They're very, very common on certain plants like hibiscus. And outdoors, the weather kind of plays a part as far as controlling them or managing them. We get a periodic rain or whatever, and that kind of holds down their population. But when you bring them inside, they don't have that. They're in an ideal situation. And so you may see a big spike in the population. The same with aphids. Indoors, the conditions are ideal for them, and they typically reproduce very quickly.
All right. So, and no natural predators inside, at least not usually.
The spiders aren't going to do it, no.
Unless you have cats, maybe that will work.
I tell you what, my cats don't get the job done. So you were talking about hibiscus. Now, a lot of people move different kinds of plants in and out during the year. And, you know, whatever kind of houseplant you have, you know probably already whether you'd like to move it in or out. Cindy, what's the benefit of taking your houseplants outside in the summer months?
Yeah, the summer months when you have them outside, usually in kind of a shady condition anyway, they get way more light than they ever would inside, even if they're in a sunny window. They get those nice warm temperatures. They tend to grow better just because of the warmer environment and the higher light levels. So they often put on a lot of new growth. Which is great. And then we treat them well when they're outside, so we water them regularly. We might even fertilize them because they're growing well. So they're just usually fairly happy. And then bringing them back inside, they have a tendency to go through some sort of transplant shock, but Usually we bring something back in the fall that, you know, is maybe twice the size of what we took out in the spring.
And, of course, we have to have a place to put these things in the fall. I'm sure that, yes. that sometimes things have grown so much. Is this a time, Cindy, when we need to be thinking about transplanting or putting things in a bigger pot?
You can do some transplanting. I usually tell people to limit this because once you bring them back inside, they may not grow as well over the winter months as they did in the summer months outside. So if you can just limit, just do the bare minimum pruning, repot when you have to. If you can wait to do those kind of pruning and repotting in late winter or early spring before you're going to take them back outside, then they grow better, and we know we're going to have a big growth flush at that time. So you're not, you know, cutting them back and bringing them into an environment that isn't as good as it was and what they had. And they kind of just kind of sit there sometimes for a month or two before they start to grow again.
And Richard, you mentioned a hibiscus, which is, of course, not going to survive the winter in Iowa if you leave it outside. And there are a number of different plants that many of us treat as annuals that we can also bring in. Tell me more about that.
Well, for example, geraniums. And with those, we have two ways of doing that. If they're growing in the ground, we can dig those up and very carefully shake off the dirt and bring them inside and put them in a large paper bag or box and then put those plants in a cool, dry location. And ideally, the temperature should be around 40 to 50. And these are basically bare root plants, and they will stay dormant through the winter. And then around early November, you want to take them out of storage and prune them back. And typically what happens is that the outer extremities will die and kind of shrivel up, but the lower portion will be nice and green and solid. And so you prune them back to the live tissue, you pot them up, and typically within a few days you see new growth. And so if you do this as far as a pruning back in early March, you should have a nice plant to set outside in the spring. If you want to do the potted plant option, if they're growing in pots, just bring them inside. If they're growing in the ground, pot them up, bring them inside. And put the geraniums in a sunny window. And the temperature around 60, 65 is fine. That's fine. And then maybe water those every 3 to 4 weeks, just every 3 to 4 weeks. That keeps them alive, but they're not really growing. They're just kind of existing. And then around, again, early March, take those plants that are growing in pots and cut them back by half or two-thirds. And they'll start to grow again, and again, you'll have a nice plant by May.
What do you feel the benefit is to overwintering your geraniums like that as opposed to buying new every year?
They get huge. You have, if you do it several years in a row, and I have, you have some really large plants, and much bigger than what you would buy, and you save money on it. It's very, very simple to do, actually.
All right, and they do get big and showy, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Are there any other plants that some of us may not think about doing this with that we might want to consider, Richard?
Coleus. If you have an annual coleus, you can bring those inside. They root very easily. All you have to do is cut them off, stick them in water, and they will typically root within like 4 weeks or so. And then you pot them up, and you just put them in a bright, light location, and they do fine all winter long.
I have a neighbor who has a greenhouse, and I can see through the sort of frosted glass all through the winter. There are geraniums behind that glass, and it's just beautiful. But you don't need to have a greenhouse to be able to do something like this, right?
No, just a house.
Now, house as far with a window.
As far as that cool location, now I have a unused room that's kind of the storage room that we don't really use. And we just close it off in the wintertime, and that's an ideal place for it.
All right, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. With me today, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. They're here to answer your questions. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100, tweet us at Iowa Public Radio, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. We are starting to see the leaves change a little bit over here in the southeastern part of the state. Richard, are you seeing that in central Iowa as well?
Definitely. The white ash are turning kind of purple. The green ash yellow, the honey locust yellow, the hard maple is kind of orangish. So definitely ahead of most years. But I think the key there would be we're in a drought, and so they're under stress. And we had some very cool temperatures about 2 weeks ago. And so those two things, and they're turning very early this year.
All right, so maybe if you have a drive along the Mississippi planned, you might want to move that up on your calendar a little bit. We will talk to Mark Vitosh in a couple of weeks about fall color, but you can also follow along with the peaks of fall color on the DNR's website. Let's get to the phones. Carol is on the line with a question from Des Moines. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I love Hort Fridays, and I've given twice in the last 2 days
to public radio.
I have two very important questions I hope you can answer. Number one, a year ago I got two redbud tiny trees to the Des Moines giveaway program, and I planted them in a place where I'd like to keep them smaller. Can I prune regularly redbud trees and keep them a little smaller?
Well, they can definitely be pruned, but they're kind of hard to make or keep small, per se. They're not a big tree by themselves. They tend to get about 20, 25 feet tall and maybe a similar width. You can definitely prune them. Late winter, early spring would be a good time, so late March, early April.
Okay. Then the other question I have, I'm looking for a shade tree for my backyard, and I also, because I'm an older adult, I'm really wanting shade soon. So I was looking online and I encountered something called London exclamation plane tree under fastgrowingtrees.com. Is that something you would recommend for Des Moines, Iowa on the south side where it gets lots of sun? Or could you recommend something else that would be a good tree for shade?
Okay. Well, that London plane tree, in essence, is a sycamore. If you're familiar with sycamores, this is a hybrid sycamore. And so they get very, very big. They do grow very quickly. You might want to consider possibly an American elm or hybrid elm. There are American elm varieties that are Dutch elm disease resistant. The hybrids are also very resistant. And these plants are very adaptable. They grow very quickly. They have planted some American elms in a parking lot of the clinic here in Ames. It's a very, very difficult site, and they have done very, very well. They tolerate that site very, very nicely, so you might want to consider that. You might want to consider possibly a red oak. Red oaks they grow pretty quickly in comparison to other oak species, and they're a very nice tree as far as good shape, and they turn kind of a wine red in the fall, so you might want to consider a red oak also.
All right, Carol, that gives you some options. Thank you so much for calling. And here's a question, Cindy, I know you will love. This is from Emily. She says, my daughter is a senior in high school and is interested in pursuing a career with plants. She doesn't like agriculture, but loves the other elements of horticulture. What possible career paths are there? And do they require schooling? How can she get started on this path? And you try to keep it to a minute or so. I know you could give us a seminar.
I could give you a seminar. And yes, horticulture is a great option. It is a division of agriculture. There are a lot of opportunities from, you know, working and owning a florist to owning and operating a greenhouse or working in a greenhouse to doing research or education at a public garden. It's pretty diverse field or topic or at horticulture at ISU, we also teach a lot about turf grass science, as well as fruit and vegetables, growing fruits and vegetables. So there's lots of opportunity there. Usually it does require some schooling, whether it's associate's degree from a community college, or I highly recommend a four-year degree from Iowa State University, of course. And we have six or seven different options or emphasis for someone who is thinking about horticulture as a career path. So visit the Department of Horticulture webpage. That might give them a better idea. Or talk to someone at a local community college that often has a horticulture program. Then you can kind of get that personal connection.
All right.
And we can discuss it more. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I've always wanted to do this, or I've always wanted to be in horticulture, but I've learned by practicing and doing different things, which aspects I like better than others. And I tell you what, I like most all of them. So it's been a fun ride.
All right. Well, Emily, I hope that gives your daughter a place to start. And let's go back to the phones. Betty is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Betty.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
I have two nice gardenia flowers that on winter time, before it becomes 30 degrees, I would put in the sunroom on the south side of my house. My house is in front of the Des Moines Art Center area on 46th Street. I usually put them inside the sunroom in October or before 30 degrees freezing. That's what I was told. But should I transfer them now? Since I heard that it's time now to transfer tropical plants. The gardenias are like 1 meter tall and like a 3/4 meter. And I just repotted, put it in a bigger pot. I had them for 5 years and they bloom beautifully and perennially.
All right. Richard, what do you think? Is it time?
I think I would bring them in probably this weekend or early next week. It's going to get quite cool by late next week. And put them in a brightly lit location where it's on the cool side. They do like temperatures around 60 degrees. And keep them well watered, and hopefully they'll do fine inside.
All right, Betty, thanks so much for your call. Here's a question from Eric in Emmitsburg. Cindy, you can do this one. How do you keep potted mums through the winter?
So if they're actually potted, you could try to bring them inside and grow them as a, you know, a house plant. Generally, we tell people to plant those in the landscape. If they're a hardy or garden mum, they should be able to survive. Plant them, water them well, and then mulch them after the tops die, and keep your fingers crossed. Because sometimes they overwinter well, sometimes they don't overwinter as well. But you'll have a better chance of success if you actually plant them outside, if they're a hardy cultivar. And if they're not a hardy cultivar, then you have to bring them in and treat them like a houseplant.
All right. And Daniel says, my wife has been bringing in her geraniums for at least 6 years now. She keeps them in our bay window where they get some late afternoon sun and we enjoy the early April bloom. So there's just an endorsement from Daniel. Let's go back to the phone. Steve is on the line in South Des Moines. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a black walnut grove that I would like to turn into an orchard, a fruit orchard. And my question is, how close can I plant fruit trees to existing walnut trees? And then the second half of that is, if I have to remove them, how long do I need to wait before I put my fruit trees in?
Richard?
Well, the walnuts produce a chemical called juglone, which will inhibit the growth of some plants, not all, but some plants. As far as the fruit trees, they should be well beyond the drip line of the walnut trees and have enough space to grow themselves. And if they do, they should be okay. As far as how long this chemical actually persists, I don't know that anybody really knows on that. It's produced by the entire tree. It's present in the foliage, in the bark, in the wood, in the roots. But no one really knows, I don't think, how long it will persist. I would assume not very long.
And I did have one other question, unrelated. I have a houseplant, a Hindu rope. Are you familiar with that?
Ahoya?
Mm-hmm.
I've heard it called a Hindu rope, and mm-hmm. I've never heard it called anything else. It's a succulent with, it's got kind of curled up leaves that are thick.
Right.
And a fairly dark green, and it produces yes. these lavender flowers that look fake. They look like they're plastic.
Right.
Go ahead.
So what's the question about it?
Oh, as far as transplanting it into a new pot, it's long and overgrown, I'm sure very root-bound. And what I'd really like to do is transplant it and split it up so that I can share it with other family members.
Okay. That would be a Hoya, H-O-Y-A. As far as transplanting it, I would probably tend to do that maybe in the spring, like March or April. You might also try to take some cuttings, where you take some stem cuttings and try to root those in either coarse sand or perlite. Keep the rooting medium moist, and hopefully within several weeks they'll root, and then you have a new plant.
All right, Steve, that sounds like a great plan. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Carol in Ames. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I have two bug questions. My first one is, I go out to harvest broccoli right now, it happens to be, and almost all the plants in my garden have so many white flies. As soon as I touch the plant, white flies are just flying everywhere. And I don't think at this time of year it's the end of the world because we're so close to the end of the growing season, but I've also had them on tomatoes sometimes so early. Is there anything you can spray on the white fly that wouldn't harm an edible crop?
Well, at this point, I don't think I'd really worry much.
No, I don't think this year it matters, but other times I've had the same thing happen.
Normally what happens is that this year we've had a drought, and normally mm-hmm. when you have regular rains, that tends to manage or control the population. So most years, we don't have these problems with those. But this year, mm-hmm. with the extended drought, that's why we're seeing it. There are some insecticides that you can use, but the key with those is that they're hard to control because you have to apply the insecticide to the bottom of the foliage because mm-hmm. that's where they're typically hiding. And what they're doing is they're sucking sap from the plant tissue. So if you go out there and spray, and you spray the upper leaf surfaces of the plant, you're really not going to control them because you have to get the insecticide directly on them. So you have to be very thorough if you want to mm-hmm. spray, and make sure you spray the underside of the foliage. But normally the weather takes care of it.
Go ahead, Carol.
Oh, can you spray? I didn't know if there were insecticides that I could spray that would still be all right on an edible crop. I've tried insecticidal soap before, but what types of things for white fly?
I would visit the garden center and carefully read the label. It might be something like 7, for example, that would work. Now, if you use an insecticide, there's going to be a waiting period where if you apply to an edible crop, then you're going to have to wait a certain number of days before you can harvest and eat the produce. But if you follow directions, you should be fine.
Yeah. Okay. And then I have a bunch of the little green caterpillars on, like, kale. And the same sort of question is, I've not sprayed anything on anything in my garden, and usually I get enough. But they're eating the kale leaves faster than I can get out there to get them. So there are none. It's just a spine of a leaf and nothing left. Yeah, and I don't know whether I should just plant more or just not plant it for a couple of years, or if there's, you know, I've heard about BT.
Yeah, we've only got 20 seconds here. Okay, we may have to come back to this after the break. Richard, do you have a quick answer?
BT products would work, yes.
Okay, so check those out. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back with Horticulture Day in just a moment. With me, Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before we go back to the phone, here's a question from Gene in Earlham. Richard, do pawpaw trees do well in Iowa?
They basically would, let's say, in maybe the southern part of the state. That when you get into northern Iowa, probably not. So basically south of Interstate 80.
All right, and they can do very well south of Interstate 80.
Yeah.
I know that they're very productive for some folks. All right, let's get back to the phones. April is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, April.
Hi. I have a question about a little leaf linden in our front yard, and it has developed some vertical cracks on the trunk, all around the trunk of the tree. And we didn't notice this earlier this spring or summer. And just wondering if we should be doing something about it or if the storm might have caused damage.
Well, it could be fairly superficial, where maybe just the bark is cracking itself. And that's not a big deal. That's not a big problem. If the crack extends into the wood, that's a more serious concern. There's not much you can do about it. It's basically up to the tree to deal with that. The concern would be that if it is a crack, if it goes into the wood, that eventually you may get a rot that may get inside there and begin to decay the wood. And if that occurs, then that affects the structural integrity of the tree itself. But hopefully that won't happen, but you really can't do anything to help the tree. And if it's just a bark-type crack, don't worry about it at all.
All right, April, I hope that helps. And we've got another storm damage question here quickly from Sherry in Marshalltown. I had two red buds thrown over by the big wind in August. The trees were cut and removed, but there are suckers that started growing immediately. Bless their hearts. Should I encourage this and prune to have a leader in the future, or should I remove the stumps and start again on my east properly lined? Richard?
I think I would give them a chance. If the main part of the tree has been destroyed, they will sucker. Now, what you could do is have it be a multi-stemmed plant, which is perfectly fine. Or if you want a single trunk, then go out next spring and select the best one, the straightest one, and cut off the rest.
All right. And Richard Giron, you made me promise that I would not make a big deal out of your retirement today, but this is your last pre-retirement Horticulture Day after 36 years at Iowa State University and on the air here as well, back at WOI, but now at Iowa Public Radio. And so before we have to say goodbye this hour, I do want to take a moment to listen to the voices of some of your friends and colleagues looking back over those 36 years.
Congratulations on your retirement, Richard. It's been my pleasure to sit across the table from you in the WI studio for all of your 36 years at Iowa State University. The year 2020 was already made memorable and miserable by coronavirus, the derecho, and the threat of murder hornets, and now your retirement just adds to our gloom. going forward, it'll be easier to imagine Richard without ISU than it will be to imagine ISU and Talk of Iowa Hort Day without Richard. Thank you, Richard, and congratulations.
But what I think I've learned the most from Richard has been information about growing fruit at home. Growing things like strawberries, raspberries, apples, and pears at home looks a little different than it does when they're grown commercially. And I've learned a lot from Richard about how to care for and deal with problems in these plants. And fruit trees in particular can have a lot of problems, in particular when you're growing them at home.
Well, when I come on IPR, we actually have to go to the communications building on campus. So it's about a 10-12 minute walk from the horticulture building, the horticulture hall, to the communications building. And that 10 to 12 minutes, I actually look forward to it, because that's the time when me and Richard will have this wonderful conversation about, you know, trees on the way, plants and frost, and, you know, it's a nice 12-minute horticulture walk for me. And so I actually look forward to it. So it's an exciting time for me when Richard comes and knocks at my door and says, okay, Ajay, let's go. Let's be on the radio.
Richard has infinite patience, so how he can answer the same question over and over again, and make the asker of that question feel like it's the first time he's ever heard the question. You know what I'm saying? I mean, how do people do that? Because if you ask him about Creeping Charlie, he's going to answer that question as if that's the first time he's ever answered it. And that's an amazing skill. A long time ago, I used to fill in for him on the Hort line when he would take vacation. And what a tough job. And by the end of the week, I'll tell you, I got tired of answering the same question over and over again. So he has amazing patience and amazing kindness.
My favorite thing, or just the thing that I admire of Richard, is his ability to speak in detail. That somebody, and I've heard it hundreds of times over the last 25 years, somebody would call in and say, hey, I want to start this plant. How do I do it? Richard can go from step one to step 10 like he's reading it out of a book. It's so much detail and so much precision, but he's not reading it out of a book. He's taking it out of his head, and it just sounds so natural and like he's a talking book. And I've always hoped that I could do 10 to 15% of that someday, to have that ability to be able to know so much detail and give so much good precision answers.
Right. I have learned so much from Richard. Coming from the South, there was a lot that I didn't know about gardening in the Midwest. So there's tons of things that I learned about gardening in the Midwest from Richard. But I think the most valuable thing that I've learned, or the thing that I most admire and try to mimic, is his compassion and commitment to excellence. He truly cares about getting it right, and does this with integrity and respect, like any true extension professional.
So, Richard, on behalf of Iowa State University Extension and Outreach, I want to share a sincere thank you for your long and impactful career. You've been a ready resource to county directors, office professionals, and master gardeners across the state for more than 30 years. Whether by phone or email or in person or on the radio, you're an unshakable expert on all things plants, yards, and gardens. We will miss you as you start your next adventure. But know that we appreciate everything that you've done for Iowans in our state. You've made us all smarter and better caretakers of everything we grow. Congratulations on your retirement.
But the thing that I think I learned from Richard that helped me the most in terms of my career was just to relax. Working with the horticulture gang was just always such a joy, but They worked very close by to the WOY studios where the horticulture show originated. And so they would wait until the very last minute sometimes to show up for the show. So I learned patience. I learned to trust that they would be there. And they helped me to relax in so many situations. We hosted the show live from the state fair, and there was all kinds of chaos and various things that went wrong, and they got me through all of it. Thank you for everything, Richard. We're really going to miss you.
Most of those voices are familiar to you as members of the horticulture gang. We heard from entomologist Donald Lewis, Aaron Style of Ryman Gardens, Ajay Nair, vegetable specialist, Jeff Isles, tree guy and chair of the horticulture department, Mark Vitosh, DNR forester, and of course, Cindy Haynes. We also heard from John Lawrence, Iowa State University vice president for extension and outreach, and my colleague, Catherine Perkins, who spent nearly 10 years hosting Talk of Iowa and horticulture day before I returned to Iowa 10 years ago. And Richard, I admire you so much and your patience, your kindness, your respect for every individual you encounter is really inspirational to me. And it's been such a joy, such a pleasure to get to spend so much time with you on the air during these years. And again, I know you didn't want us to make a big deal out of it. Cindy and I decided this was a compromise, a little deal.
A small big deal.
Right. But thank you. Thank you so much. And do you have a memory you want to share from those 36 years, Richard?
Well, you know, when I first started doing this, I had really dark brown hair. But that has turned white many, many years ago. So as far as patience, I would have to attribute that to my mom.
No.
My parents had 8 kids, and we must have drove my parents crazy. But my mom was always so very patient. So I give her credit for that.
Well, and I know that you have offered, I hope, to come back again in the future. So this is not your last horticulture day on the air. And I do want to mention that Iowa Public Radio and the Horticulture Department and Extension at Iowa State University, we are all committed to continuing Horticulture Day. So we'll be back again next Friday. But without you, is there anything in particular you're looking forward to in retirement besides not having to be somewhere at 10 o'clock on a Friday morning?
Well, if it wasn't for this COVID thing, I would pack up and go to a national park.
Yeah.
But instead, I scheduled a colonoscopy. Instead. I really have.
Oh, that is not nearly as much fun, but I hope you have lots of camping and hiking in your future. Richard Geron, thank you for everything.
You're welcome.
Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, retiring after 36 years. Cindy Haynes was also here today, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And of course, she will be back again many times as we continue Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.